Welcome to the Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board meeting for Wednesday, January 8th, 2014. This is a change from our typical first Monday meetings, but it's happening. For the first order of business, approval of minutes is no longer an action item. As you may recall, our meetings are now audio recorded, so we will not be approving the minutes. If you would like a copy of the minutes from previous meetings, then you may contact the Clark County DD office and they will make arrangements to get those to you. So we will be adjusting the agenda in future meetings. Is there any community input this evening?
Yes. I just thought it bared mention that we have a customer who has been working with the Red Lion for 24 plus years that retired on January 3rd. This is Kristen Wade with Clark County Developmental Disabilities Program. Thank you. And so we just wanted to make mention of this because this is a milestone, and Goldman and Associates is not here to celebrate, but they sent me a little information to share that she was the first person that Goldman and Associates worked with in individual supported employment, and she was told by the workshop at that time that she would never work. She started working at Red Lion 5 days after he received the authorization. And so for him and for her, you know, it seemed like kind of the end of an era, and is emotional for mom, the customer, and Goldman and Associates. So there will be an article in the Columbian Living section this Sunday. And then there's also a retirement party, but details are still being figured out on that. So we can send that to you when we learn more.
Great.
Thank you. Is there any other community input?
I have just a...
Let me just get your name so we have it on.
Mona Personnel, DDC, and local parents. The legislative reception for in Olympia will be on Wednesday, January, is that 22nd? Thank you. 22nd. I understand from that there hasn't been a lot of PR out about it, so I'll just make that announcement, and I'll be sure that those come out from the DD Council. I'll send it out to make sure we get it out. But it is that evening, begins at 5:30. Thank you. Not a very well-informed
announcement,
I guess.
but there will be an electronic flyer that gets sent out that will...
Okay. I'll make sure that you get that. I'll make sure that we're covered in Clark County. And then I just wanted to share this resource and with you and let you know that this is happening. There's a project going on between the DDA and the DDT in five states. Washington is one of those five states, called Community of Practice, and it's really looking at supporting families across the lifespan over the life course. And part of the project at this point, the DDC has borrowed, with permission from, I believe, the state of Missouri, a folder that has pre-printed information about many of the resources at the state level around developmental disabilities. So, for example, there's a healthy living section, legal and advocacy services, community living, early learning and education, advocacy and family support, pre-printed with those contact information and so forth, and a folder that we hope to distribute widely that people can begin to collect information that they would like to keep and have in one spot as a family resource, a community resource, or whatever resource. So the DD Council and DDA have worked together to, and I think the DD Council funded most of the first run of these. We ordered the 2,500, they were gone in 2 days. So another 2,000 are coming in, and we have some now earmarked for Clark County to come, and I'll get them to Mary and she can disseminate them. But they'll be a really great resource to pass, fill with local resources, and pass out around the county. So I'll be sure that those get to Mary.
Can we pass that around?
Yes.
Is that
good? Yeah. And I'll leave one with Mary, and then the rest will be coming in the next couple weeks. Thank you. So that project's pretty exciting because it really is connecting and looking at connecting, in response to that No Pay Services caseload survey, adults that kind of get lost or at home not being served or are not as connected as children in early learning or in school-age students. And so I'm pretty excited about some of the innovative ideas about giving information out, connecting people in the community to resources and getting them engaged and supported across the lifespan. So it's a pretty exciting project. I'm really excited to be part of it. So.
Thank you.
That's the first step in that project.
Any other community? Okay. Moving along on our agenda, special orders. Our first item is our housing group that Dell. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. There's a group of parents and other individuals that have been meeting together, exploring different options for housing for people with disabilities. We don't have a formal name, we just kind of call ourselves the housing group. Nothing fancy about that, but it is being headed up by Sandra Silvera of the Clark County Parent Coalition. I've mentioned this before. She met today with Amy Price of DDA, and they went over some things. I'll just pass some of this on in general terms. Hopefully we can get Sandy here one of these meetings and to give us maybe some more detail on it. One of the things that they discussed is there's an organization called REACH. I don't know if that's the full name of it, but they're taking over from ACE, which had the responsibility of when housing became available through Covington Commons, Cascadia, and perhaps some other housing developments, that they would work through ACE, and supposedly at that time, Clark of Clark County would be contacted when the openings were available. We don't know if that ever happened, but what we've come up with now is that REACH has come up with an agreement with DDA that REACH will contact DDA when there are openings available for housing, so that DDA is really wanting to cooperate and to help out, because there are a lot of people looking for housing. There sometimes is housing that's available, but nobody seems to know about it. And so this is a real positive step forward in that regard. Another thing that we're working on, there's an organization up in the Seattle, King County area called Partners for Housing. They have a program where they do roommate matching, and you fill out a questionnaire, and it's a fairly involved thing. Right now, it's a pay-for-service situation. It's not exactly cheap, but it probably in the long run is a good thing, and we're trying to work with them to see if we can bring their program down here to Clark County. It's $250 for a family to do the questionnaire, and then there are other services. But once they've completed the questionnaire, their name is put into a pool, and then they can be matched up with other individuals. And because one of the things that has come up in our housing meetings is that if you have a room situation, how do you find people who are going to fit well together? I mean, sometimes it's hard to fit together with your own husband or wife or whatever, you know. And so, our parents, yeah. So, find as best as possible people who will fit well together, and that's the purpose of this. And we're looking into bring some of that program down here to Clark County.
Dale, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Well, first of all, obviously they've got it down to a science, because farming.com, match.com, farmers.com, I mean, they have figured out how to do a good, you know, decent matchup on that. And if I missed it, pardon me, but who runs that program? Is that private, or the King or King County runs it?
It's Partners for Housing. I can give you some information.
I think it's private.
I think it is private.
Maybe. It's not the county. But it's a lack of roommate matching has been a hole for years.
Mm-hmm.
When we were hassling with the housing authority, even, that was one of the things that we were having trouble with, was appropriate roommate matching.
This 250 to me sounds like a lot of money when you don't have much. But relative to the mismatches and the cost of changing, it seems pretty reasonable. If you're in the data system and it doesn't work with that match, I'm assuming you can, you know, rematch or something.
Well, and if a family, for example, is involved in the Washington TV Trust,
they could use
those monies for this. There are families I know that right now are willing to say, hey, this is important enough, we'll pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a trust for your child, you can draw money from that. I have some information on it if anyone is interested. Maybe copies could be made available.
Yeah, I can make copies and send it out.
Is it a one-time only fee, or is it $250 every year?
Comprehensive profile questionnaire, $250. That's stage one. Stage two, identify potential roommate and cluster matches, another $250. Cluster development and training, in other words, time and materials based on the needs of the cluster. The cluster is this group of 2, 3, 4, whatever individuals. They don't give a price for that. I suppose it's broken down by what they need. So, you know, you could potentially have $500, perhaps probably more, you know, that would be involved in that. So, again, you know, it's an option.
Mm-hmm.
And something that you could plan ahead for if you had a child who was getting up into that age. So these are some of the things that we're looking at. Another one is independent living skills. There's a good program over in the Portland area. We're working to try to bring help them to expand over into Clark County to help young people, children, school age or above, to develop independent living skills. And so those are some of the things that we're working on. Anybody else have questions?
I think last time I was here, but I'm not sure if it was the last meeting you had, you mentioned something about having a conference or sharing some information, an information sharing day or something.
Yes.
For others in the county that haven't been involved in the meeting.
Right. Mike Piper of the ARC met with us, and his suggestion was, and we're hoping that he will help us move forward on this, is what he called a summit, where we try to bring together people who are involved in these things and try to attract as many parents, families as possible to gain information, maybe do brainstorming, maybe we come up with something different than anybody else has ever thought of, or working with someone like this to bring a program to the area, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So
projected time frame for that to happen?
No, Sandy, in the email I got from her today, said that she's hopeful that he will meet with us in January 27th. And if you know of any parents who are at the point where they ought to be thinking about housing for children, they should be getting involved in this. And I can get information to you. But anyway, to start, hope, she's hoping he will be there at the meeting to start moving forward, but hopefully in the next few months. It hasn't been set.
But the next housing meeting is January 27th.
Yes.
That's a Monday evening?
I don't know.
They're usually Monday evenings, I think. The 25th is a Saturday.
Okay.
Rotary.
And we meet at the offices of the Arc of Clark County. And I don't remember the exact time. It's usually like 6:30, but don't quote me.
Call Sandy if I'm not.
Yes.
So, Del, this is, I have a question. It's kind of on the same lines, because I recall that 6 months ago or a year ago when Sandy, I believe, was here before, talking about what you've been looking into with housing and all that, and they had kind of discovered that there's a point where you've got clients living in a co-parenting situation where things just kind of crumble, and then they end up moving back home, or there's burnout involved, but nobody really wants to say it's not working because it's also income. And I know that was something that was mentioned. Does this group talk about anything to do around that, as far as trying to provide some sort of ongoing training or just some opportunities to get some of those care providers together? Has that been anything, or is it more?
I've been providing the Tonyac to the companion home people, which has seemed to help a little bit.
Did you say providing cognac?
David,
wow.
David, I just wondered if you were being recorded here.
I did part of the rest of the program.
David is a consultant. He got, when the companion home providers ask, he goes out and meets with them as a group to just kind of talk about how things are going. There's still, with the companion homes, seem to be about a 12-year life cycle for people in that role. Not for everybody. Some people have been stable for a longer period of time than that. But there were several that seemed to go about 12 years, and that's when there needed to be a change.
And that, to me, seemed actually longer than I would have guessed.
Yeah.
I would have guessed shorter.
Yeah. No, the people in that that are in companion homes right now generally have pretty significant needs. Mm-hmm. So I would have guessed that too. I thought. But that means there is some constant need for recruitment or thinking about backup or.
Yeah.
A little different than some of what you're not looking at companion homes like.
No. Although some in the housing group might be.
Well, there you have all sorts of abilities.
Right.
There's a really wide range
of
abilities in that group.
Yeah. In answer to the question, Partners for Housing, they do have they can provide conflict resolution. Facilitating, monitoring, facilitating social activities.
And that's among roommates.
Yes.
Living together, yeah.
Yeah. Now, again, this is an organization that's up in King County, and so whether we would be able to get all of that down here would be problematic.
I think you'd want to know if you really wanted it all down there.
Sure.
There are some things you might want, and then there are some things that they may provide. I don't know. Do you really want that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, it made me think too, and this is probably a really crazy idea, but I mean, people take in boarders too as tenants in their home. College students, you know, different. They have an extra room. The kids have grown up. They've moved out. Or there's a house in my neighborhood. At one point, her mom lived with her, so she has a ramp that goes into her house. Lives in the house by herself. So somebody that could live in a situation where there's not really direct care provided, but there's somebody else that is a companion to you when they're home. But I wonder if there's a way that you could maybe broaden the opportunity by figuring out a way to kind of reach out to some of those people that might want to take in a tenant for you know, rent a bedroom to them for a couple hundred dollars a month or whatever, and have that, something in their home.
That concept is something the Commission on Aging,
yeah, or
housing program,
just say that. There's a lot
is,
of people.
Is really advocating for, is that, you know, people start bringing in roommates as a way to share expenses, mm-hmm. also combat loneliness, mm-hmm. And those types of things. But the big issue is the screening process to make sure the person that's coming into your home and to be sharing your life isn't the next Ted Bundy, you know.
Yeah, and vice versa for people with disabilities.
Yeah.
You know, that is the big elephant in the table, is with roommate matching too.
But there are people without disabilities that don't have their roommate matches.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Even on Match.com?
No. Even on Farmers.com.
I don't even know what is Farmers.
Oh, yeah.
It's just another matching service, yeah, that happens to specific go-to country kind of folks. They call it Farmers.com.
Because they're farmers?
Because they enjoy a country lifestyle. Okay.
They usually check the cuticles to see if there's dirt.
Okay, yeah. Okay. But I just, you know, made me think that even getting a boarder or a tenant, somebody in a home, would be another way to broaden the opportunities for people that don't necessarily want a roommate that's of like needs, but just needs a place to live. It's not with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you, Doc. Any other questions for Doc?
Just another comment. When we were looking at some interesting community supports, a group in Seattle, and I believe it's the movement's called Aging in Place. But I think there's a smaller subgroup that follows that model in Seattle that has some great success around bringing supports into the home of people as they age, and they've been looking at that model for other populations. And they've had some real interesting success, yeah, in Seattle, in the Northgate, Linwood neighborhoods of the Seattle area. So it's worth looking into that model. There's some things that could pull from them that would be real applicable and interesting to explore.
All right. Thank you. Okay, our next item is the Silver iPad Project update from Kristen Wade.
Hello again. So just to recap, we received, we were awarded funding through the Silver Grant to be used through January 1st, 2013 through June 30th, 2014. And our focus is in helping transition from school to work for exiting high school students with developmental disabilities. And we're beginning with Vancouver School District. That's kind of where we left you off, I think, at the last time we updated you. So, you know, we plan on doing this by training students and families in assistive technology and information technology, improving communication and coordination between support groups and service entities, and training the service provider in assistive technology so that they're better prepared to receive that generation that's coming out that's so familiar with AT, IT type things, to name a few of the things that we're doing there. So, to address the latter, we have developed the Clark County Vendor iPad Learning Cohort, which is comprised of 16 direct staff members from 7 of our contracted agencies, plus myself and Marcia Threlkeld with WISE. We had our kickoff meeting November 19th. Yes. No, okay. And we have four more meetings scheduled through May of 2014. And so just kind of an update on that, the kickoff meeting was really focused on bringing these 16 users that varied from, wow, this is the first time I'm ever looking at an Apple product skill level, to I have been using Apple products, you know, for ages. So what we mainly looked at through this first meeting was settings, accessibility, some of the built-in apps, because we find that it's really important to use built-in apps with iPad so that you don't get into, you know, the person that's using it doesn't get into a situation where they've got something specialized that nobody else has ever seen. And then we also did look at some outside apps just to start off with. Dropbox, which is an opportunity for kind of a cloud as well as sharing documents with other people. Keynote, which helps with presentations, but so you could even use it as like a visual resume or organizing notes. And then something called Sketch, which is an opportunity for you to take your iPad, take a picture of something, and then write notes over the top of it that you could then use for like task sequencing or reminders, things like that. So then, of course, as a cohort, we were also assigned homework. And so between the meetings, we were assigned to download more apps, the ones that we had previously talked about, the Dropbox, Sketch, and then something called Evernotes. And then we're to create task queuing and like an introduction type thing where somebody could, a customer could use it that says, hello, my name is, and, you know, I'm seeking a job in and I'm good at, and then we're, our hope is to obtain releases of information or identify someone who will provide us with a release of information so that we come back to the cohort and show everybody what we've done. And then this is just like this great learning opportunity for everybody to see like, oh, that person did that with that app, and continue the learning forward.
So the purpose is to what? Beta test or become familiar with different applications that in turn could be suggested to educators, consumers. What's the objective?
So the objective is for the in this cohort, the objective is for the service providers, the staff that are using to be able to support customers who are using assistive technology and be familiar enough with it that when they encounter a new customer that they might have something in the back of their mind that, oh, this thing that I played with over here or I used or I saw this person using could really benefit them in their employment search or on the job.
And make people more independent,
yes,
both on the job and off the job.
Yes.
It needs to coordinate. That's why the families, too, love the school age.
So helping in the job, coaching, and mentoring.
We are actually beta testing. This is a different project, but it all seems to flow together. We're Employers Overload and Trillium are beta testing an employment app that someone, a speech language person up north, created. And it is specifically around job coaching and things like that. Is it not?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my question was if you looked at the work autonomy app that Jennifer.
No,
that is the one and the same.
Yeah,
okay. What she's speaking about is that app. We have not introduced it to the cohort yet because the cohort, we just had our kickoff meeting, and we literally were just leveling the playing field for everybody within the group and getting some kind of small homework assignments. I happen to have the work autonomy app on my iPad, and I plan on bringing it to the cohort to show. Although, because there are certain agencies that have been part of the beta testing, there are people within the cohort that are already familiar with it and using it. Would you say that's correct?
Is it out for sale yet? Because she was hoping for October. I know when we met, and I thought that.
I don't know. She's been emailing you guys, but I didn't.
The only thing that she. Oh, go ahead.
Oh,
okay.
You're going to look it up?
Yeah.
Are you going to use your iPad?
Yeah. So she was emailing us because she provided us with, she provided me with a free test, one of that.
So if Kristen, if this is overwhelmingly successful and you guys are done in June and you're excited about the outcomes and meeting the objectives, then what?
All right.
We will. We have the option to continue on with the foundation for another year. We'll probably ask for that. And look, especially for those people with the most significant disabilities, to see if we can help people be more employable, more easily employed.
I guess coming from. Coming from a technology background, that almost requires someone on staff full time. It changes daily. There's
right.
great tools that come available daily, updated versions. If the cohort becomes informed now, literally 60 days from now, they're uninformed again. And so it's almost scary that when you learn something, then you either need to keep going and you want more.
Right.
And so
I think part of that, at least my hopes for it, and some of the people that I've talked to within the cohort, is, you know, the funding that we're using through the grant is really to, like, get this kicked off, you know. Wise in be, you know, sending Marcia down to actually, you know, teach us some of the things. But through this process of these next five meetings that we have, and maybe it will continue for another year, but through those, we're really looking for kind of self-selected leaders that will kind of pop up within the cohort, and that it'll continue, funding or not, that this is something that is important enough to those that have chosen to participate to continue to meet on some sort of routine basis. Because it's really important. What I've found is for these people to have, you know, for staff to have connections outside of just, you know, their organization, because you can kind of get stuck in, we just know this one app. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's great to have that sounding board and inspiration to see what other people are doing and using it for.
I think we have we've been underutilizing technology, so this is a way to try and catch up. And then you have to remember the Vancouver School District, and I'm not sure, Susan, tell me about cameras, but the Vancouver School District passed a levy where there will be a piece of technology, iPad or something like that, in every student's hand. So we have people coming out of school who are using this technology to communicate,
yep.
to do resumes, to do all sorts of things. And that's only going to increase as their technology levy, you know, push out more and more technology to all students. So
it's the number one aid for my 22-year-old daughter, and we introduced her to technology at a very young age. And so I would really encourage that, and part of the consideration is there may be a cohort that would be wonderful, but a consideration of even having a staff member that, I mean, this could be a full-time job, and I think a really large value to Clark County GDD. There's stuff out there that we don't even know, but we don't know.
We really utilize Marcia through WISE. That is her full-time job. And so it is, she is a wealth of knowledge, and, you know, kind of has her thumb on the pulse of all these updates and new things coming out and whatnot. And she sends out information. There's a information and assistive technology conference that's coming up. So there's definitely efforts for continued education on that beyond just the Clark County.
Yeah, no,
do you
want to
go?
potentially. Yeah, potentially. And I'm looking at it more or less of the perspective of you guys, because I would think that is, especially with Marcia, that you said, I'm thinking of more of the end user, more of Lauren. When my daughter gets suggested a app, you know, who can tell her how to get it? Who can tell her how to use it?
So a user's group, maybe, would be a...
beautiful algorithm that.
So most of my comments have been based upon the user's perspective.
Yeah.
How would my daughter
your agency is raising his hand.
we can provide.
Yeah.
Okay. The current person who's doing the job development may not be the person that has the most experience in the technology, but we have three people in the platform.
Yes.
And very good.
And
yes.
So if we're not hooking up to that technology, we certainly can't to Lauren's use of technology. So if you think that it's deficient or we're not making that connection,
we as the guardians have not encouraged it, didn't even quite quickly think about apps that would assist her, and yet it is her best way to learn and to be able to have more influence over what happens for her. So this to me has been really powerful to learn from my own situation.
But that's really good information for the agency to know too, and I'm hoping that parents will share that, because that encourages us to support organizations to be able to support individuals like that. We need to know that.
Sorry,
it's good to hear. Yay.
But there is the conference in March.
March 12th in Seattle. It's a free conference, but registration is limited, so you'd want to register soon.
Do you want to email the information on I think you sent it out to the agency, right?
Yes, I sent it to the agency.
So it seems like all employment providers should be expected to be up to date on this.
It seems like. But we do not force consultation. So
we had one that did not.
We have one that chose not to participate.
Personally, I don't know very much about technology, but I have people on my staff that kind of that younger generation that they want to know every app and they want to do everything with an app. To a certain extent, it drives me crazy, but it's okay with me as long as they don't force me.
Dragging and kicking.
More power to that.
Yes.
I have at least three or four people that they're constantly looking at different apps and doing that. So I think what you're talking about is that as we hire new people to be on our staff, that we definitely, that's one of the considerations, is having a person on staff that is motivated to, at least one person or more that are motivated to do that.
And as a side note, Trish was successful in looking this up, and it is available on iTunes, Work Autonomy app.
For $189.
Is that how much it is?
Well, that's what she said last summer, but I don't know. It may have changed.
Any other questions for me?
I have a suggestion.
Okay.
I've been, over the years, working quite a bit with Dennis Campbell to try and get him to the point where he can use an iPad, and we never reached that point. And one of the problems is that there really are no mechanical enhancements for an iPad, and he doesn't have the control to be able to use the screen without going too far or just misses. My guess is there are lots of kids that have the same kinds of problems, and the app doesn't help. There aren't any apps that help. Mechanical helps of some kind might be very helpful or very useful, and if somehow or other you could involve some people who have the knowledge and background to create those kinds of, not apps, but other kinds of features.
So there's that, the Washington Assistive Technology Assistance
Act program.
Act program. they put on this conference a couple of years ago that I went to, and then this technology conference that I just mentioned, it's March 12th, it happened about this time last year, and there is conversation I've heard, I couldn't reiterate what I have heard accurately, but there is stuff out there that people are doing.
There are some things, but yeah. They don't work very well.
Have you talked to WATAP?
Talk to WATAP or to Marsha with WISE, and I think she might surprise you.
Maybe. But
the Washington.
I don't know that there's any hope for Dennis, but I'd say that there might be other people.
Well, we have a young man who has idling technology, and he won't be. He has probably Microsoft products, I'm guessing. I don't know.
Well.
But we need to continue to work with his stuff, too, because that's very specialized for people who don't have control of their.
Well, and I at this conference last year, I saw this wonderful presentation by some gentlemen. They probably have a fit now that I don't remember. I think Scotland. And they webcasted them in, and they have this simple little dongle, you know, something that you plug into the computer that you could then plug into a switch. And it enabled this rolling mechanism so that I think Dennis could probably use something where it rolled and then you hit the switch when it was over what you wanted. So, I mean, there's some pretty amazing stuff out there. You just got to talk to the right people. I don't remember. Well, that's not the name of the product, but
I suck at watching what
it's called. That's a good one.
It's called a dongle, which is the thing that you plug into your computer for certain things.
Well, I'm just suggesting that there are things beyond that.
Yes, absolutely.
And there are things now. I was at a training yesterday with the person center planning, and Nicholas Montoya from the ESB shared, you know, how you can use switches, and there's switches that have Bluetooth capacity to them too, so they can integrate with other devices and communicate. But like you said, the switches, and you can use a joystick to get something that you want to happen over here or on this or whatever. So it's really there, but it's probably still not readily available. But yeah, we're getting there. We're getting really close.
And the Washington Assistive Technology Act program will actually do an assessment for an individual to determine what kind of technology that they might need, and so they can be really helpful as well. They want to get really specific about what the person needs.
Okay. University just okay. I was thinking it was Ellensburg.
Yeah.
Anything else?
See what you started?
Who's putting on that conference?
Is it at WISE?
Is it WISE?
Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you.
Okay, our next agenda item is Legislature 2014.
Okay.
And Mayor.
Well, Darla sent me the Community Advocacy Coalition notes, so I'll do what I can with these. There are some eligibility changes. Part of it is to clean things up. Part of it is to respond to the new DSM-5. And it's really still complicated, which was my response to them. We need something we can put in the plan that is a little simpler than the multiple pages that the case manager has to go through to figure out that. But that being said, it's going to change. There may be a few people that lose service. There may be a few people that get service. That's really not clear yet. I don't understand what this exactly means. Heavy fiscal lift, $15 million. I don't know that either. Okay. One of the big things this next session is the mental health lawsuit, because they were not giving appropriate services to people under the age of 21. And I believe, from what I read, that's a $34 million fix that the state lost me to. So that's going to be a big deal. and that's going to take up much of the time of the legislature. Even if they don't do a budget, they're going to have to do a FIT. There needs to be a new Region 1 administrator and other program coordinators in PDA and a superintendent at FERCRES because they're missing that. And oh, this is one I would have liked to have known earlier, but apparently Senator Hunningford is dropping a bill to reopen the Yakima Valley School to admission. Yeah, which, you know, considering the fact that the last person from here that went there from respite had to leave there because they couldn't deal with her, that's kind of amazing. Anyway, that's all I know right now. Nothing's happened. The session starts on Monday.
Is it appropriate if that particular bill that's being proposed to reopen that would it be appropriate for us to send a letter as a body to each member of our delegation expressing our concern about supporting something like that?
I think they're already appalled, but yes. But let's see. He may not get
May not get even to hear.
Because that's a big fiscal note. It's a huge recommendation. It contradicts the recommendations of the 12th of the task force. Okay. And the 11 before that.
Okay.
So, as has been our history in the past, when the legislatures are in town on their winter holidays, we try to get together with them and share our legislative priorities, which we discussed in our last meeting. And so I'm going to let Meredith talk a little bit about how that went. And anybody else that was there can feel free to. Everybody was there but me. So, sorry. Some of us work. No.
As Allison said, you know, this is a supplemental budget, so it's not a budget year. But they were willing to listen, and we really. We all agreed that those transition dollars are really critical and important, and they get a real bang for their buck out of that. And they were receptive to that. And really pretty agreeable with what we talked about, because it isn't a huge, I mean, it's not a budget year, so there's not going to be a lot, but we, they went well, and we had a good conversation around that, and then there was something brought up about the training wage. Curls my toes that they want a training wage for 16 to 17 year olds so in the food service industry, and I have great concerns about that because it can flow into other things as well, and I don't think that's a real good practice to start. But
that Ms. Pike, that was in the paper.
Yes.
Ms. Pike.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ms. Pike.
That was in the paper.
Yeah. She wants a $2 probably less for 16 and 17 year olds. My concern is they say it will be monitored by
employment
security, but you know, I just don't like the idea. I think it just opens up too many possibilities for other things. Now, one of the legislators, when we were talking to Ann Rivers today, we're talking about is 16, 17, oh, if it's in school, should it go to 21? And it's like, no. It shouldn't. But as far as, you know, they're really on board with the transition, and knowing that those dollars are really critical and how much they've really helped, they're on board with that.
Mm-hmm. Is that a training wage just for people with
For 16 and 17-year-olds, because it came from the food service industry, because they're complaining that they've got to pay these kids minimum wage and train them, and it's like, yeah.
Training
So
they were hiring. They were hiring folks that are experienced workers for those same positions, rather than hire a teenager that really has no experience and background at all. And so it leaves the 16 and 17 year olds out without being able to really get access to some of those same jobs. And so I felt theory sounds okay. Practice is going to serve well, but the idea behind it, but if the idea is to solve the problem, then that's
me that's not necessarily the best approach, but it's at least trying to solve the problem, because there's too many young adults that cannot get employment. Even when you tell them, hey, get down and flip some burgers, you know, get started, and they can't get it.
The problem is that when jobs are plentiful, those kinds of jobs are available to teens.
Yes.
But in this economy, in the economy that we've had, I see adults doing those jobs that once were...
And often they're taking on two or three of those jobs to try to make their...
Right, because they're not getting full-time hours
in a lot of those positions.
Right, and the growth in Clark County has, this is Trish McConaughey, I just read an article about this, that the job growth in Clark County, though we're coming back, the family wage jobs have not come back as much, and that the job growth has been in these 10 and 12 hour, 10 and $12 an hour jobs here in Clark County.
And I guess because I grew up in Tacoma and I worked in the parks when I was in college, and I was naive then, but if you were a woman and you worked your first year, you got $2 an hour. The second year, you got $2.15, and the third year, you got $2.25. If you were a guy, you started your first year at $2.25, and that's what this feels like to me. You know,
I don't disagree with that, but being a small employer myself, once you start jumping over $9 an hour for minimum wage, you start looking for someone that can do 10 things, not one. So I would be apt to not hire.
But they were not really talking about your industry, though. They were talking about food service.
Only food service.
Yeah, only food service.
But the same thing. I'd be concerned if we get this new minimum wage that fully going to clip jobs for people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that reason, though. Mm-hmm. And the same reason. Where we used to be able to develop a job and build it around a particular set of skills that an individual had, and then if the wages continue to climb, you're suddenly looking for somebody that can do 10 things, not just work in the cafeteria or work in the, it's not people with disabilities issue, but it's effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then they were talking, that's where the discussion went, is that 16 and 17, but then, you know, Anne says, well, if they're in school till they're 21, it's like, not everybody's in, you know. It's a mess.
Well, I think that part of this is, that motivated this, is the push to increase minimum wage. And so, my understanding, and I haven't read just what I heard, as Pike say, is that it would be limited to perhaps a 6-month period of time. It would be a certain age, and that the employer would not be allowed to dismiss that person for no cause at the end of the time. That would prevent them from perpetually hiring, training wage. So, I think there needs to be safeguards, but I can see where, my first job was mowing lawns. It was well below minimum wage. and I also picked berries in the berry field. I didn't have minimum wage. But it was a great opportunity for me to help support my family and for my own self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And I think for our people with disabilities, it isn't just for them. Mm-hmm. It's for kids in school. Gives them an opportunity to get some work skills.
I guess I just don't have great faith in that 6 months. Now, I know the kids are going to be doing that, but the employers are, I manipulate that, and that's my concern.
Well, it isn't clear where it'll go. That was just one of the things brought up. It's not...
as far as things that we're concerned about, they're all on board.
Yeah, they were great and want to help in any way they can. All of them were. Yeah. What can we do? We just say thank you this time.
Yeah.
We'll get you next.
We're the governor's priority.
I found this article that I was reading. Would you mind if I quoted this about the lower wage jobs? So it's an article in the Vancouver Business Journal, and it's Scott Bailey, our regional economist, saying that Clark County's lost a lot of middle wage jobs in the recession. What's come back in the last 2 years about 3,400 full-time positions added in 2011 and 12. 1,000 of those jobs were below $12 an hour, and just 1,000, just under 1,000 were $12 to $26 an hour. So that was what I was talking about.
Okay, any more discussion? Moving on, so supplemental county budget. This is in reference to some information that was shared with our community at our last public meeting about a proposed change in the formula for funding GP and mental health for veterans. I think there was five levy groups altogether, weren't there?
It was just the three.
And so there were some concerns that funding, now that property tax values have begun to recover and are increasing again, that DD that had taken a big hit budget-wise from county money would be losing money if they switched to the formula that would be based on projected growth.
It would be based on general fund growth. It's not clear if it's permissible to do that. This is the only county in the state that was considering that.
So as a result of the discussion we had, it was proposed that our board draft a letter that went personally to each commissioner and their assistant, and families rallied together and visited our commissioners prior to their budget meeting to decide how they were going to be funding those services in Clark County with our Clark County dollars. And they decided to stay the course with the way that it's been funded. And so we'll still get 1.25 cents per $1,000 assessed, as has been happening since 1967. So a huge thank you to
67.
And so thank you to the families that stepped forward and bent some ears that showed up at the official meeting, and it worked. The next item, so the nominating committee, January, we have a rollover in our leadership of our Developmental Disabilities Advisory Board, and much to my chagrin, I can't be the board chair anymore because I've done it for two terms. And so, Leanne and Walt and I formed a committee. And our new vice chair, since he's not here, and he knows this, right?
Yeah,
he knows. Okay, we told him. Somebody told him. Will be Ted Engelbrecht is the proposed recommendation. And the lovely woman to my far left, Leanne Larson, was part of the nominating committee, which I think is amazing.
Her arms look a little twisted.
And I think she is an amazing advocate. She has inspirational wisdom and insight into life with developmental disabilities. She's very intelligent and articulate. So as I was coming this evening, and I got this out of my car, I don't know if some of you old timers might recognize this. This was given to me by Dell as I succeeded him as board chair. And
you have to vote on it.
And I have not pass it on yet because we haven't voted. But in the event that Leanne's nomination as board chair and Ted's nomination as vice chair gets approved, we have to first make a motion and then we need to approve it. Then the gavel, in quotation marks, air quotes, I said that for the recording, will be passed. I wish I would have added one more ribbon. I should have added a ribbon.
So, Susan, are you seeking a motion now?
Well, Mr. Gordon.
I'd like to move that we adopt the recommendations of the nominating committee for both the vice chair and chair.
Do I have a second?
I second.
Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
I have to.
I got to use it.
Thank you, Leanne.
Here you go.
Looks like she successfully cleaned off all of the remaining blood.
Oh,
there, so.
Yeah,
you in mind, it's a tenderizer.
Yes, can be used in preparation of your meals also.
I do my best to get here shortly after 5. I get off work at 5. I'm down the street. I race like I'm having
meals. Yeah, and so as part of the provision, and this might be, I don't know, I'm going to shake your world a little, but we have proposed that our meetings will begin at 5:15. And so starting in March, when we have our next public meeting, it will begin at 5:15. And through the duration of Leanne's 2 terms as board chair, and we'll continue with that practice so she can be refreshed and lively when she gets ready. So did she get to finish the meeting?
Do we need a motion for that?
It's trending an update. Do we have some information?
Yeah, there's a couple of little things. One is, if you really have nothing better to do next Tuesday from 5:30 to fill in the blank, you may want to go online and or go to CCTV and watch the CTRAN Board of Directors meeting. The reason why this may be a benefit to you is that one of the staff reports is the ADA Task Force recommendations to the Board of Directors for their approval. Now, we have a young woman here that was a member of the task force that I won't identify because she's moving around too much right now. But she was a member of the task force, and some of the recommendations that were made, that have been made, really will affect CVAN customers on a regular basis. Probably the most striking one will be the no-show policy. We have a policy in CVAN that says that currently if you have 3 no-shows within a 6-month period of time, the 4th no-show will equal a 1-week suspension of service. If that climbs up to 6 no-shows within that same 6-month period of time, it'll be a 1-month suspension of service. 9 no-shows equals a 2-month. The ADA Task Force recommended that we make some fundamental changes. One is that we break the review period from a semi-annual to a quarterly review period. So it would be January through March, April through June, and et cetera, et cetera. And we would keep the same threshold of 3 no-shows and the 4th resulting in a consequence. However, the consequence wouldn't ramp up like the current policy is. It wouldn't go from 1 week to 1 month to 2 months to 10 years, but rather would just stay at a flat 1 week consequence. So what that means to customers is that currently right now, a CVAN customer could have 6 no-shows in a given year and never have any consequence for their actions. 3 in the first half of the year, 3 in the second half of the year, and none of those are transferred to the next period. That would change to a total of 12. So we're actually doubling the amount of opportunities for people to have no-shows. We've always had a review process that allows for an informal appeal, and if it's out of the hands of the people that are involved, you know, if it's not their fault, if it's service provider's fault, then we won't charge them a no-show. So that's a significant change. One of the other issues is to maintain the current CVAN service boundaries. ADA says that the minimum service for transit is 3/4 mile along a fixed route corridor. However, we go above and beyond that, and we serve an additional 47 people that live outside of and transport outside of that boundaries within the Vancouver Urban Growth Boundary. The ADA Task Force in 2009 and 2013 both were adamant that we maintain status quo. The agency has the right to withdraw some of that and make it a little bit tighter, but the task force didn't feel that was really necessary, considering how many people it affected and the overall impact on service. What you'll see in this week's Columbian will be an article about CDAN services, because in addition to the ADA task force recommendations, there's going to be a budget request to increase the number of drivers we have in CVAN from the current limitation of 64 to 71. The reason being, in all honesty, is demand for service is climbing pretty steeply. 2013 had 6.26% more riders than 2012. 2012 had approximately 4.5% more riders than 2011. And if you look at a graph, you'll see it just climbing upward. The problem is that the number of drivers we currently have isn't adequate to serve all of the customers, especially since we can't say no.
What's the greatest growing group?
Right now, the largest growing group would probably be seniors, people over the age of 60, 70, and their eligibility or opportunity to use CVAN isn't based on their age. It's based on the fact they have a disability. And as Larry knows, and I know, and some of the rest of us, is that as we get older, disabilities seem to be a consequence of gaining age. I don't know about Larry. I get up in the morning, I'm going, growing old is not for sissies. But
you don't know what you're missing out.
Oh, I can't wait.
You're a little older.
Yeah. I told the reporter today is that what I'm doing is trying to organize the service in such a way so that in 10, 15, 20 years, when I use it, it's going to be good because I'll be one of those really strong advocates. The board of directors meeting is going to be discussing those issues. And the debate will probably go on for a little bit of time. I think the board as a whole is very supportive of CVAN, very supportive of serving people with disabilities. One of the concepts that was raised in the ADA task force and something that I've been promoting for a number of years is the concept of a community van pool. And what it is utilizing some of the resources that CTRAN has through some grant monies to buy a couple of what are called Eldorado body-on-chassis buses and to then lend-lease those to community groups and organizations for their own use. So, for example, Scott, you're really involved with Special Olympics. Maybe one of the groups that would utilize the community van pool would be Special Olympic athletes, their parents, coaches, etc. Mm-hmm. We have groups like the Clark County, they may have a need for something like that. Right now, the Human Services Council does a reserve a ride program that is in addition to their Medicaid transportation that is designed to use, and they're using a small amount of grant money to provide service to people that regular public transportation doesn't meet their needs. So, for example, if you live in the Brush Prairie area, which is in the no-fly zone for C-TRAN and C-VAN, the community van could be an opportunity to try to help people get from point A to point B. Or let's say, for example, you're on dialysis and you get the third shift, which ends after the last buses are back in, and you currently take a taxi service to get home. You take C-VAN to get there, but you use taxis to get back. Maybe a community van pool would be appropriate. So we're now floating this idea, which was the brainchild of the Accessible Transportation Coalition Initiative, which is a project action program, and also the different community groups. So hopefully this time next year we'll have a community van pool in place. We are, asking people to consider it and be a part of it all. So that's also another recommendation of the ADA task force. And you can thank Trish for being a very strong advocate. I mean, as a staff person, sometimes advocates can be a real pain in the backside. I don't know if anybody's ever experienced that. Come on, let me do my job type of thing. However, Trish is a very effective advocate, same as Mary and some of you too as well. Some of you are on my hit list. David, for one, but
that's because I'm a Democrat.
For that, everybody has a weakness. But my point is that the different people that were involved in this task force are advocates, and they're advocating for people with disabilities, not only cognitive disabilities, but disabilities that are across. And they've really made our system more accountable and I think responsive to the needs of the community. So Tuesday, 5:30, it's must-see TV. You can stream it, you know, and you may want to have a glass of wine or something like that. That's all right. That's all right. People drink. So that's the update on transit.
Thank you, Walt.
I have a question, Mike. You talked about no-shows. How much of a problem is that? It sounds like it must be a fairly significant problem if you're going to all this work.
It can be. You know what I found, because I've been doing this now for 15 years, is that the people of Clark County, the people that use C-Band services in Clark County, are very responsible. They call it a black mark, when in reality it's not that at all. And we expect things happen, life happens. People are very very aware of that. Some people aren't, you know, like any other population. We have about a 1% no-show rate, 1 to 1.5, some years 1.5, most of the time it's about 1%. When I compare that with my colleagues throughout Washington State and in other states, is that we have a very good no-show rate. And keep in mind is that every time there's a no-show, we basically wasted, right now, $38.17. And so people recognize that and recognize the impact it has on their fellow passengers. And we all know we have to stretch that dollar as much as possible. So it's not a huge problem. And I think by expanding the number of no-shows provides a level of grace and understanding that, that comes with the territory. If you are a person that uses C-Band services, there's a reason why, and so sometimes it's out of your control. In some cases, it isn't. I think it was a wise way of approaching it.
Well, I want to tell you my appreciation for C-Tran and C-Band, and specifically you, Walt. Because we've had some transportation challenges with some of our activities with DD folks, and you guys are always very, very cooperative. And quite frankly, if we were not able to get the answers that we needed, it would have been total trust that it wasn't out of lack of trying. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate what you guys do for us, because, and I think that will reflect in the no-shows and so forth,
because people appreciate
C-Band. Mm-hmm. And your drivers, I think, are pretty incredible.
Right.
And so thank you.
Well, thank you. You know, one of the things that I'm happy is that our community is, this is a community problem that needs to be solved by the community and not just one segment of the community. And so that's why the community van pull idea is something I really like, because it's saying, you know what, let's take it out of just conventional thinking and try to be a little bit more creative.
Any other discussion? Thank you. Okay, any other new business?
Well, I don't have any new business, but I want to tell you that Dennis Campbell, I was in the hospital over the weekend. I had breathing problems, but he's home now and he's doing better. And so I think he's just fine. Mm-hmm. But he was in the hospital, so I thought you'd like to know.
Yeah.
He's out now?
Yeah.
Road to recovery. Any other new business? Okay. I declare the first meeting of 2014 adjourned at 6:18 p.m. Thank you all for being here.